want to go ahead and get started?
Yes, sir.
We have one visitor here today from PSN, Jason. His new client, Matt, is he going to take over?
He's going to work with us and we'll work together, but you'll start to see him. But his whole responsibility is client management. And so we're very happy to have him. He's been with us, I guess, 2 months now, maybe?
A little over 3 months now.
Yes. Getting very busy. And so it's a pleasure to introduce him today to Jason.
Welcome, Jason.
Great, thanks for having me.
First thing on the agenda is the minutes approval. Anyone have a chance to review the minutes? Make a motion. Have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion is carried. We'll jump right into the reports with Kim Michaels of Sykes.
Hi, my name is Kim Michaels and I'm with Sykes Investment Advisors, and it's a pleasure to be with you today. Wanted to first off just talk to you about some of the market dynamics that took place this quarter and then its effect upon the returns. And just want to, given there's so much that was discussed as far as yield curve, flattening of yield curve and so forth, wanted to kind of jump in there. Short rates particularly rose this quarter. I mean, we saw increases in rates as we saw in first quarter. It was a bit more moderate compared to first quarter, so not as dramatic. But we did see a flattening of the yield curve, and that flattening was more so in the second quarter as compared to the first quarter. And then last week, we continued to see corporate spreads widen, which means that they were doing poorly. And as a result, as we touch upon performance later, returns were a bit muted, particularly in the intermediate investment grade marketplace. Sykes manages a 1 to 10 year mandate, and you can see what the yield curve was at the end of the quarter. And we were exposed to the entire area of the curve that experienced an increase in rates. In addition, corporates were an underperformer. And one thing to note there is there was some distinction between performance of corporates in the quarter. So the longer the corporate, the poorer the performance. And so we certainly are exposed a little bit more so to the longer end of the curve compared to the shorter mandates that you have. Just to give you an indication of what that upturn in interest rates was, if you look at the 2 year and 3 year treasury, they were up about 25 basis points. The 5 year was up 18. The 10-year was up 12, and the 30-year was unchanged. So essentially, the long end of the curve remained anchored, while the short end was ticking up. And that resulted in some flattening of the curve. One thing that has been in the marketplace as far as discussion is the differential between the 2-year treasury and the 10-year. And it ended, as you see here, at 33 basis points and resulted in 19 basis points year to date of flattening. Much of that flattening was in the second quarter, 15 basis points compared to four last quarter. And you can see that when you compare what that differential between a 2-year and a 10-year is, and historically, over the last 10 years, has averaged about 173 basis points, and the range has been 32 to 291. So you can see we're at the low end of that range as far as the flattening of the yield curve. And many have stated, as far as pundits, if you have a flattening of the yield curve, is it a precursor for recession? And we certainly would counsel some caution with regards to that, because we have been through periods where we've had an extended period of the flattening of the yield curve. And some of those periods have been in the late 1990s, like 1998, 1999. We've also seen it occur in 05, 06, and 07. When you start to potentially see a flattening, It is certainly not imminent in the next quarter or two, and we're not there at this point. We did see the differential in July get to about 25. We're at about 30 as of Friday's close. So just something that, you know, given where the range has been, it's discussed in the marketplace. Bernanke, who was the previous Fed chair before Yellen and her retirement, he had commented that, you know, the inversion of the yield curve is certainly a sign of economic slowdown, but it in fact could be different this time. Some people caution when they hear the words, it's different this time. But he did comment on the fact that its signaling tower may not be as effective because we are in a place where we've never been before, and the fact that we've had some regulatory changes, we've got quantitative easing that took place, and now we've got the balance sheet normalization process going on. And so that is an aspect that could, in fact, make it different. One thing to note, though, is GDP for the first estimate for second quarter came in at 4.1%. So the economy is still quite strong. We saw a 2.2 revision for first quarter, and we're anticipating third quarter to be fairly strong as well. So just some noise that you may hear in the marketplace, but something to monitor. We did see the 10-year hit a 3.11. You can see we ended the quarter at a 2.86. One interesting thing to note about that is we did find that in April, a lot of the uptick in rates that we saw during the quarter was in April, and Russia had actually dumped about half of their treasury exposure, which was about $47 billion. And so that certainly had some impact upon rates, particularly in the long end of the curve. And some things to monitor, and the fact that you have China and Japan, they're all investors in U.S. treasuries, and yeah, I guess one risk could be later on down the road. If they use that as a mechanism, you know, with all the dynamic going on politically, as far as maybe reinvesting less, they may not necessarily be dumping, but that's something to monitor. The Fed raised the Fed funds target rate another quarter point in June. We're now in a range of 1.75% to 2%. This was the second increase for the year, the seventh increase since December of 2015. And that was where we began this tightening cycle, where we had been at zero for an extended period of time. We anticipate two more rate increases this year, with the next targeted to be in September, a quarter basis point. The Fed continues their balance sheet normalization process, where they're reducing their balance sheet. And as we've progressed into July, into August, it upticked to $40 billion a month for the third quarter. And fourth quarter will be at $50 billion, which is where it will top out monthly until the Fed decides that its balance sheet has normalized. So they have not given an indication as to that specific dollar amount, but we will wait and see. And then the other dynamic is that we have seen more Treasury issuance in the short end of the curve. We've just got the announcement that additional increases will be particularly in that 1 to 7 year area, and there will be a new 2 month T-bill that was announced or will be announced in that auction in October. So essentially, we have some divergent central bank policy going on, and the fact that in the U.S. the Fed is hiking rates, and then you have Europe, where they are more dovish. Rates are stabilized. They have not indicated that they are not going to raise rates until summer of 2019. So they're in a low interest rate environment, and you also have the Bank of Japan that's very accommodative at this point in time. So that's an interesting dynamic for us to be on the uptick and others much more dovish. And then the other dynamic besides the Fed rate increases is looking at corporate spread widening. And this just shows you the differential over a period of time of corporates versus the Treasury, being duration neutral. And this indicator shows that the wide was towards the end of 2016. The wide was at 215 basis points. And we've gradually progressed down where late January, early February, we hit a tight between corporates and treasuries of 85 basis points. So as it tightens, corporates become richer. You're not getting paid as much for the risk that you're taking. As we had indicated before, in the third quarter into fourth quarter, we had begun to take a more defensive posture. Granted, we were a little bit early because it did bottom more towards the beginning of February, but rates, credit spreads can widen quickly, and we did see for the balance of the first quarter and through the second quarter the spread widening, such that at the end of March the differential was a 109, and then we ended June at a 123. Certainly with spreads at this level, you've seen a back off. However, we still feel that at that level, they're a little rich. And we've actually seen them come in just ever so slightly. But we would anticipate some volatility in the marketplace, and we're watching this as to opportunity. So then to then address performance. We have the performance as of June 30th, and for the second quarter, you can see that we were at 7 basis points versus the index, which is the B of A 1 to 10 year domestic master, at 8, and basically in line year to date. And you can see that the negative for the year to date period is a result of corporate spread widening. First quarter, you had mortgages widen, corporates widen. In the second quarter, we were benefited from the fact that you had corporates widen, so therefore they did poorly, but mortgages did fairly well, and we had exposure there. And you can see for the fiscal year to date and 1 year period, where we had taken our more defensive posture, and that did result in some underperformance during that time period. And for the longer term time periods, 5 year, we're pretty much in line. 7 year, 10 year, we've outperformed. I just wanted to show you on the next page, the market value was at 55.9 million. Duration is 4.2 years, so we're the longest manager. And so given that with uptick in rates, we're going to be more sensitive to interest rate increases or declines. But in this case, with rate increases, you see negative returns. The yield is just shy of 3%. We're a little bit under versus the benchmark, and that's due to our underweight in corporates and securitized. If you look down below, you can see that we were underweight in our corporates, and that did poorly. And then on the secure, and one thing I wanted to note, I didn't mention this, is looking at the differential between corporates. Longer term corporates, a very long corporate, had a negative excess spread of 288 basis points. An intermediate corporate had about negative 11. And that corporate index in general had a negative 100 basis points of excess spread. One interesting thing to note is like the high yield market in the U.S. Actually had positive excess spread. It was a positive 96 basis points. So there was like a 200 basis point differential between the investment grade corporate market and the high yield market. On the securitized side, mortgages did well this quarter, unlike the first quarter where they underperformed. And we had an underweight here, but did have a fair amount of exposure, which was beneficial. As I stated before, with the balance sheet normalization process taking place, that is incorporating treasuries and mortgages, and given that there's less reinvestment in those securities, particularly mortgages, we may see some spread widening. And so that is why we have continued to keep a defensive posture within that sector as well. And then you have commercial mortgage-backed and asset-backed securities. That is an out-of-benchmark exposure, but asset-backs in particular did well. And we kind of use that as a substitute, if you will, for government-related, because they're high-quality securities. And the government-related, which is your agencies, did better. So us being almost void, that sector was beneficial. Are there any questions as it relates to the market or the performance or the makeup? I mean, I would say that we're going to continue to keep this defensive posture at this point in time. And as it relates to the 10-year, we feel like we're going to be in this trading range of 2.5% to 3% or maybe slightly higher. We've seen periods where it's exceeded 3, but has always come back inside. You've got a lot of dynamics coming into play as far as market participants, where you see this backup in the rate in purchasing and the rates declining.
You believe that movement's going to happen in this quarter?
Yeah, I mean, we have continued to have more of a lower for a longer stance, and there's a bit of information as far as the structural forces in the marketplace that we feel are going to keep interest rates kind of kept, if you will. So certainly we have various dynamics such as, you know, the regulatory relief, tax regulation that's come into play. We don't think that that's going to be, will continue for a long period of time. So,
okay.
And then the next page, we have the compliance, and we have been in compliance for a quarter against the various portfolio limitations. And then I just wanted to briefly highlight, as far as our corporate stance, that we're underweight. And on a go-forward basis, we're looking at consumer cyclicals, energy, and technology. As far as the three prongs that we look at, that being fundamentals, technicals, and valuations, those assessments have not changed since last quarter. And obviously, from a fundamental standpoint, you've gotten heightened political and economic risk, got tariff implementations going on. We are in the late cycle of a credit phase, and certainly leverage is high. From a technical standpoint, we still have a great deal of outside purchasing of U.S. credit. But because of hedging costs, it is not as attractive as it has been. And certainly issuance has slowed a bit compared to 2017 and 16. And then lastly, as I had noted, from a valuation standpoint, we've seen some widening, but we're still assessing that from a valuation to seek for better opportunities. So are there any other questions?
See a return to a more normal yield curve. Or do you even see that?
Possibility
in anybody else?
I think it may be a while. But the thing is, you have to keep in mind is you have the Fed that's making a play on the curve itself, particularly in the short end, that is causing that flattening.
Right.
And that's because we have been at such a low rate for so long. And essentially, we have to, or they need to, raise rates such that when we get in a point where there potentially could be a recession, that they have the ability to lower the Fed funds target rate at a later time. In addition, with this balance sheet normalization process taking place and even the issuance of treasuries, the Fed's controlling as to how much they issue in the short end and how much they issue in the long end. And so I think they're being very mindful of the curve, if you will. So, I mean, we may continue to see this, as I've stated before, we've been in extended periods of time where we've had a flattening or close to flattening of the curve.
Well, certainly the long end of the curve being low helps the housing market and builders, and certainly for corporate debt, it helps that. It's kind of very unusual, though.
Well, I mean, many people were thinking that, you know, the 10-year was going to approach 4%.
I thought it would be at 4, yeah.
No, and I mean, we were of the opinion that we thought rates were going to stay lower for longer. And that's where initially we thought that there would be a flight to quality because spreads were so tight within the corporate side. I mean, we've seen some spread widening, but certainly if we are ever at a point where you see, I mean, the Fed could then come in and lower rates, and we've seen the long end actually decline as well in those periods of time. And so that's why we have a range of 2.5 to 3, if you will, a little over 3. So
is the short end artificially high or the long end artificially low?
Yes.
Good answer. I think you've got a lot of external factors, which Kim mentioned. You've got the Fed. You need these external factors to someone pull away, which they're doing over time. I think you need them to someone take a step back and let the markets react naturally. I think you've got, on the long end, you've got pension funds that are piling a lot of money in. This is the last chance for them with the new tax reform law to get in and deduct it at the old rates. So they're piling a lot of money in right now. And that's one of the factors that's really compressing the long end of the curve as well. So again, it's not necessarily a natural reaction for the curve to react the way it has. I think that'll, starting next year, that'll go away. However, you've got tariffs, you've got trade war fears. That also, on the other hand, is pushing the long end of the curve down. So there's a lot of countering. I think we've got 4% GDP print. We've got below 4% unemployment. There's a lot of fundamental factors that should dictate to a more normal yield curve. But, you know, it's the end of the cycle, or most likely towards the end of the cycle. And a yield curve flattening is not abnormal at the end of a curve. So right. I think your point to say is that when it was normalized, maybe it is normal right now. It's not It's not necessarily a linear.
Where we are at this point.
Right, but I think considering the factors that we have right now, this is probably what the yield curve should be doing. As some of these fears and these concerns go away, if they ever do, maybe it'll be a little bit more increased, more of a slope yield curve, I guess, if you want to call that normal.
Thank you.
Yeah. Interesting market.
Yeah.
Challenging. So, that's all that I had for presentation.
Motion to accept.
Quick question on corporate bonds. In the stock market, let's say you have some of the bonds you own, let's say IBM or, you know, any of them, they report, you know, subpar earnings and the stocks get hammered. Now, that's the stock side, but the bond side, is there any effect on the bond price just based on incorporation, or is it pretty much independent?
When we follow a bond, we are looking as to how they report their earnings. And certainly, if they're having difficulty, we wanted to make certain as to the revenue to be able to to pay for your principal and interest payments and what that interest coverage is. And are they, you know, how far out are they going to be able to cover that? Are they going to need more money? You know, you hear about Tesla and they're having the issue. So it's more of addressing the company in itself, and you know, the bondholders come first. And so, you know, you're wanting to assess the health of the company to repay your bondholder. And if they're, if it's getting a little bit more precarious, you're going to see spread widening. So, okay.
Motion to accept.
I make a motion. I second it.
Up next, James Siegel from Sawgrass.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, as always, for having us. Kim touched a lot on some of the macro factors that I could certainly touch on as well, but I don't want to duplicate some of her efforts. Hopefully I'll maybe touch on a few different points, maybe a point of view, or just, you know, a few different things we're looking at, and then get a little bit into portfolio and how this is all affecting your portfolio, of course. And some of the factors, as I just talked about, there's a lot of factors that are out there, as has been the case for quite some time now, but usually there's new things that roll in. But there's usually a lot of things that are at play that are certainly affecting the economy and affecting the yield curve and corporate bond spreads as well. So really a lot of things to keep an eye on. Some of the things, so just some of the factors, and I can make this list a lot longer, but we, you know, some of the main factors I think we're keeping an eye on right now are trade wars. We got into a little bit, our biggest risk or our biggest fear from the initial announcement, which was seen as somewhat of a negotiating point, still very well may be, it was the retaliatory effects of tariffs. We issue tariffs, China, Europe, they issue, it's a tit for tat, it's a back and forth. Then it really starts to trickle into the economy as we're seeing more goods and services be affected, you know, by these type of tariffs. You're seeing that now, especially with China. They just announced last week some, you know, some tariffs that are issued upon us. They seem to be taking more of a, you know, kind of putting their foot in the ground and taking more of a stand. With the EU, you know, to converse that, there seems to be a little bit more of a recession from both sides, I think, to say, hey, okay, let's take a step back, particularly as it pertains to the autos. They said, let's take a step back now, maybe go to the table. So there's a little bit less concern there. However, you know, with the day-to-day volatility of this, that could change, you know, by the time we leave this meeting. So it's certainly something we want to keep an eye on, how that pertains to the economy. I mentioned, you know, some of the yield curve effect that has on the long end of the curve, especially with those concerns for that long-term outlook. Yield curve conversion, we haven't touched on the last couple quarters. It's still there. You know, as I just previously mentioned, a yield curve flattening at the end of an economic cycle is not rare. Honestly, it makes sense. You think about it. You got the Fed raising rates on the short end of the curve. They're doing that to essentially slow the economy down because they think maybe they don't want to get overheated. Therefore, your long-term outlook on the economy would be a little bit lower than it was in previous sessions because you have the Fed trying to slow it down. So it makes sense that you have somewhat of a flattening of the yield curve. However, as comes the flattening, as it gets flatter and flatter, the, you know, the inversion is always there. And you know, there's a concern that the Fed can go too far, that some of these other factors, you know, I mentioned, are going to have too much of an effect, and you know, somebody's making a mistake there, and that the yield curve can invert. And historically, what that has meant is a recession. It doesn't mean it's going to be the next day, the next quarter. As Kim had mentioned in previous cycles, it usually takes about a year or two for that to really come into play. You mentioned, you know, 05, 06, you had the 08 recession, 99, you had the 2001, you know, .com and tech bubble. So the question is that the case now? Those are, you know, that we had the housing crisis, we had the tech bubble. One could argue there's a tech bubble happening again right now as Apple hits a $1 trillion market cap. A little bit different, of course, but I think you have to take a step back and say, every scenario is different. Every environment is different. It's not as simple as saying we had this inversion, therefore there's a recession. You've got to take every scenario a little bit differently and look at really what's at play. However, of course, it's something we're going to monitor and keep an eye on at all times. Corporate bond spreads did widen a little bit. That is technically a leading indicator to equity and equity market sell-off, which we have seen bits and pieces, you know, here and there on that side. Hasn't been a very prolonged sell-off we've seen. But something we want to keep an eye on for sure, that has actually corrected itself a little bit in July. We think there's a little bit of a technical aspect. I think some of the international demand has trickled back a little bit. I think that's going to come back into play a little bit. We do expect some widening, but that's not surprising. For us, it was the last couple of quarters getting more defensive, really lowering that corporate bond weight, and certainly the risk we had in those corporate bonds, really upgrading in quality and expectation of somewhat of a corporate bond spread widening, which we did see. However, again, we don't think it's too extreme. We still feel fairly confident in that asset class. And as we'll see a little bit, we're still overweight in that particular asset class. It comes more down to security selection, being invested in the right and the appropriate companies that are going to remain cash flow positive and very resilient to any kind of market volatility. I think one thing that we've seen recently, we sat here for 8 years of essentially 0% on short-term bonds and cash. We finally started to see that start to trickle up as the Fed started to raise rates back in 2015, 2016. Now, finally, for the first time, we're seeing actually the crossover from, this is a three-month T-bill versus the S&P 500 dividend yield. And the three-month T-bill is actually yielding more than the S&P 500 dividend yield, which we haven't seen really in the last 10 years. So this says a couple things. For one, I may say this is probably a sign that stocks are overvalued. A separate conversation altogether, but that probably is some of that as well. However, it's also saying for the first time, short-term bonds are actually providing some kind of yield. Cash is not 0% anymore, so there is some attractiveness to that asset class, and really not just cash, but the three-year part of the curve. In your case with our portfolio, the 1 to 5 year part of the curve, there's finally some opportunities there. And we've sat and we've been so defensive for so long because we knew rates were going to rise. Now we're sitting at higher yields. Now we have the opportunity to really invest some of that cash and get a little bit more aggressive.
Dave, I'm noticing on your portfolio summary, the current asset allocation is 1.3% cash.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering how high of an allocation would you go to cash, given your mandate?
I mean, cash isn't going to be an investment for us. We'll stay in cash to keep powder dry at points, but we have the ability to invest in a 1 or 2 year treasury and beat the cash rates still. So I think we would probably be more prone to do that and stay, which we have been doing.
Right.
If cash gets higher, to us that means that's not just cash, that's the 3 year part of the curve. That's the 5 year part of the curve. Now your portfolio right now is yielding about 2.75, where cash is still below 2%. Okay. So we can actually go out to a 2 or 3 year part of the curve and get beat that by about 100 basis points.
Okay, so you're definitely looking at your actual yield and not your total return in terms of your quarter-to-quarter management.
I mean, the yield is more of an indicator going forward of the type of returns you can get. You know, some of the total returns, which are low on an absolute basis, are, you know, that's what yields were. Part of the reason for those returns are because we had, you know, such low bond yields and cash rates.
Right.
We think going forward, the yield is more indicative of the type of returns we can get out of the portfolio. The yield I mentioned is 2.75. Going back maybe a year, year and a half ago, it was about 1.5%.
So I guess what I'm implying is just simply that it's important in a long-term portfolio to look at the yield rather than, you know, quarter-to-quarter fluctuations.
Yes.
In asset value.
Yes, absolutely. I would argue. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think so. I think our job, especially in the last this last environment, was we knew it was going to be low returns. We've had negative returns. For us, it was protect your principal, try not to lose money on an absolute basis and have negative returns, and then outperform the benchmark, which I think we'll get into performance a little bit. I think we've done a very good job of doing that. It's somewhat frustrating because we want to make you as much money as we can with certain risk parameters. But it was hard. I think our job was to just stay conservative, don't lose money like the benchmark was doing. Now I think we have some more opportunities this period, maybe even more in a year or so. I mentioned your yield has gone up over 100 basis points in about a year. If rates continue to go up, that should continue to increase. So our job is to find those opportunities on the 3 to 5 year part of the curve while still safe bets and solid companies. but take some of this cash rolling off. We've been in short duration, so we have that cash rolling off. Now we can put it back to work at these higher yields. So, yeah.
I think sometimes for committees, it gets frustrating when you feel like you can run down the savings and loan and throw all your money into a CD and do better.
Right. We've had this conversation with a couple of committees that say, hey, we're getting 2% to bank. Yeah. Your total returns are, you know, are 50 basis points, or 1%.
Right.
And the reality is, well, the bank, when these total returns were, when the portfolio had these total returns, the bank was yielding zero. So it's apples and oranges to look at total return versus the bank yield now. You look at the portfolio yield now, it's going to be, you know, what the bank is certainly offering and what cash rates are, because we can go out a little bit further. But yes, it's we've had that conversation a few times, comparing historical total return versus what the bank and, you know, what yields are right now. So, but I mean, for your portfolio, I think the bigger picture is yields are up. Now there's a little bit more opportunities to be a little bit more aggressive and, you know, get you higher returns while still maintaining that, you know, that safe, high-quality portfolio. A couple of things, I don't want to get too much into it because I know Kim has mentioned it, but we've mentioned all these positive fundamentals in terms of GDP and unemployment. However, to fund some of these, the growth has been caused a lot by this, you know, this new tax reform. To fund a lot of this and the shortfall, the Treasury has got to go out and issue a lot of bonds. That's going to have an impact on the long end of the curve. What kind of impact that has as we run more and more of a budget deficit, what kind of impact that has on the economy and the balance sheet is certainly something to keep an eye on. This is just a forecast of how the budget is expected to grow. The Treasury just came out and said that they actually had, they got to issue more than they initially had expected. As you cut taxes and you add some fiscal stimulus, the hope and the bet, I guess, is that you're going to have higher GDP and higher growth, and that's going to make up for the shortfall from that funding status. The question remains to be seen how that will have an impact, but that's certainly something we want to monitor, and, you know, everyone will be monitoring. I won't get too much into the yield curve. I think we've touched it at this point, but again, something we want to monitor, and I mentioned some of the factors that it's not as simple as just saying yield curve flattening, yield curve inversion, recession. There's a lot of other factors that go into play. I think as it pertains to your portfolio in the 1 to 5, this is basically saying that the yield curve flattening has been more exaggerated on the longer end of the curve and not so much on the shorter end of the curve, so it doesn't have as much of an impact. But it's more of a what it says for the economy and not necessarily your portfolio in this case. I mentioned, you know, the labor market. I think interesting here is for the first time, really, since pre-recession, you have more job openings than unemployed people. So you actually have less people to fill the amount of job openings that are existing in the market right now. So I think what we've seen historically is as you have this type of tighter labor market, that's when wages start to pick up. And we've seen trickles and small fits of wage increases, but not to the extent that you would expect if you're an economist. You're looking at pure numbers, you would have certainly expected wages to pick up on a more exaggerated pace at this point, and that hasn't happened. There's other factors that go into it. I think the type of labor market we have, I think the type of priorities that companies have now, and that employees have, quite honestly. I think you have a generation that looks for other factors aside from just money. It could be time off, it could be things in the workplace, the other perks that are being offered, you know, in addition to just actual wages, which I think has somewhat of an impact. And I think you've got companies that are still a little bit scarred from the recession and that are afraid to go out and hire people at higher salaries with the risks of the trade wars and the tariffs and the late end cycle. And I think there's still this 08 fear of what happened. So companies are still a little bit hesitant to really put all their cash to work and hire employees at these higher rates. Too much. Talk a little bit about the portfolios. We're talking just corporate bond spreads, as we mentioned. A little bit of widening on the quarter. It's really more of a first quarter type of change we saw. And looking at the bottom, the year-to-date change was 25 basis points on corporate bond spreads. The quarter-over-quarter was just 2 basis points, so almost flat. We did see a underperformance on the lower quality investment grade space. So the triple Bs underperformed the higher quality single double As, which makes sense. However, in the first quarter, that actually didn't happen. So it's nice to see somewhat of a normal reaction in the corporate bond space. Again, being your portfolio being so high quality and the fact that we rotated into even higher quality really minimize this impact. And as a matter of fact, your security selection was a positive impact for the quarter on your portfolio. Just touching on performance a little bit, for the quarter, we outperformed. We were about 34 basis points versus the benchmark of 17 basis points. Looking at a fiscal year date, we do have a negative return of negative 16 basis points. However, compared to the benchmark at negative 60, I think we've done a good job of really protecting your principal. On a one-year basis, similar story, negative 16 for the benchmark, and we've actually been positive, you know, positive 27 basis points. These are huge numbers, unfortunately. That's more of a factor of the environment and what bonds, what yields we're offering. So I think it was our job in that type of environment to really, again, protect your principal, try not to exhibit a negative return, and be a little bit more defensive and outperform the benchmark in this case. As we look going forward, now that we're sitting at a little bit higher yields, I think we'll be a little bit more aggressive, and I think your total returns will be a little bit more indicative of what the yields are stating. I think we'll be a little bit happier from that standpoint. Certainly no guarantees on anything. I think we hope that this, we've been sitting in this low-yielding, low-return environment for really quite some time now. I do think we have some opportunities here as rates trickle up to be a little bit, get a little bit more higher returns. We have to be careful because the Fed is not done yet. At some point they'll be done. And the market will price that in when it's a little bit more clear when that is. There's probably a few more rate hikes this year, and then we expect, probably two or three next year as well. But once that's a little bit more clear, the market will price that in, and I think we'll have, maybe a little bit more of a normal yield curve, a little bit more normal environment. We'll have some opportunities there. I think your portfolio will be a little bit higher return than we've seen in the last couple of years. In terms of the portfolio attributes, we're still short duration. We're sitting at about 80% because we think the Fed is still raising rates, and we think rates are going to increase, especially on the short end, irrespective of what happens on the long end. So we're going to remain a little bit more defensive as we stand right now. We're going to invest those proceeds a little bit longer on the curve. I would expect as we do that to see that duration ratio relative to the benchmark start to come up a little bit. However, as we sit right now, we're still going to be a little bit defensive and then take advantage of that over time. In terms of compliance, we remain in compliance as it pertains to what we're providing with. I think one quick thing, we look at the scenario analysis going forward, not to get into every scenario, but I think one thing, column three, is if there's no change in the yield curve, that's not going to happen. However, just from a hypothetical standpoint, you look at the returns you get over a one-year basis, and it's above 3%, and that was sitting, again, at below 2%, just going back about, maybe 12, 15 months. So again, that's just more indicative of the type of returns you should expect. I shouldn't say that. Not that you should expect, but the type of returns that are potentially there if there's no type of drastic movement. More likely, and what consensus is saying, is if rates continue to move up, looking at the last column 17, which we are somewhat in agreement with, but you're looking at still about a 2.5% total return. I think those returns are there. Not to say that they're definitely going to happen. But for the first time in a while, I think there's potential, at least for those higher total returns.
Mm-hmm. We're looking forward to it.
I don't get too excited. But it is a little bit reassuring, at least. I'll end there if there's any follow-up questions.
Any questions for David?
I'm okay with you. Make a motion.
Accept. Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Carries. Steve from PFM.
All right. Good morning, everybody. I'm the last one, so I think I'll do a little bit less on the market today because I think our two fellow colleagues did a really great job in doing that. And given the discussion about returns and interest income, maybe I'll touch on this a little bit here. Just to give you a little bit idea of where we've been, which is an interesting thing to look at. If you look at June 30th, 2017, it's not up there, the yield on cost, so if you look at this number right over here, yield on cost is 192. June of of 2017, the yield of cost was 148. So it shows you how far we've come in the last year. The yield of cost is the cost at the time of purchase. So if you held it to maturity, that would be the yield you would receive. And so in just a short period of time, we're getting close to 2%. So from a budgetary standpoint, the interest income component of your budget should be, you should see increases there. Specifically in this portfolio, as interest rates have been rising, and as both my colleagues have been talking about higher interest rates, and we do also expect at least two more Fed increases this year. And just from last quarter, we had a yield on cost of 171, so about 21 basis points just in one quarter. So a lot of changes are happening to the budget, and from a cash perspective, more interest income is coming in back to the city of Ocala, so that's good. And as the interest rates continue to rise, you'll see more cash flow coming in. Obviously, that's had some impact on the total return because market values have been challenged with rising interest rates. And if you look at our performance on this page, you'll see that we're also defensive. We're at a 173 year duration versus 179 as the benchmark. We've, as you know, I've reported on for several years now, we've done it on purpose with rising interest rates since we had the first Fed increase in December 15 of 2015. We've kept the duration a little bit short of the benchmark to help protect for market value fluctuations. But good contributing factors has been corporate spreads, even though they've been up and down, they're still much higher than treasury agencies. Asset backs have also helped to the portfolio. So the quarter return was 39, the benchmark was 22, so we're up 17. For the year, we were up 34, the benchmark was 9, and we were at 43. So a pretty good result from that perspective. And when you look at quarter to quarter, as you recall, March was a really tough quarter, and I would say this quarter is pretty much just the opposite. If you remember last quarter, we had stock market down for the first time in 10 years with the fixed income market being down at the same time. So it was a very challenging quarter from that perspective. And then also December, we saw the Fed raise interest rates. So we had two quarters back-to-back at negative for the benchmark, but leaving the whole year still at a positive. So we've had a pretty good run for it for this year so far, ending June 30th of about 34 basis points for the year. From a market value basis, you'll see that the change in market value was a slightly down 34,000, but the interest income is significantly higher than that decline in market value, so that's why you'll see total returns or positive numbers in this quarter. Also, from a trading perspective, you should see in the details in our portfolio holdings further into the report, lots of trades have taken place, especially over the last several quarters, as we're keeping the portfolio up to date with rising interest rates. So you will see lots of sales took place and lots of purchases have taken place. And there's about 7,500 basis points difference between the coupon rates. As interest rates are rising, we've got to keep the portfolio constantly moving along the yield curve so that we add the next higher interest rate adjustments and higher coupons to the portfolio. From an asset allocation perspective, most slight changes really occurred from corporates. We've added, we're about 40% in corporates. This time last year, actually September of last year, we were at 35. So we've got another 5% to corporates. And with the agencies being in treasury about the same, and then you also notice that asset backs are about the same. Agencies have dropped. We're about 17% in September of last year. We're about 10% this year. So it's made more sense to go into corporates. It's made more sense to stay in the asset backs. We've got just a little bit, about a percent more of that. So that's really the contributing factors. Those asset classes have had good, from a yield perspective, interest income perspective, has helped with the market value challenge that we've had. From a credit quality, we haven't talked much about credit quality today, but from a credit quality, the short-term portfolio is high credit quality. producing lots of liquidity in case you do need cash. So that's your first line of defense once you use your liquidity investments. So the credit quality is very high. From the top holdings, you'll see that United States Treasuries, about 28%, and then some of the agencies, and then some of the corporates, the well-known corporates you'll recognize are in the portfolio. Going back to some of the situations that we've been watching for, would be, slide back here, let's talk a little bit about, I think we need to kind of talk a little more about inflation. This is really the big news, I thought, in this quarter, that inflation finally hit 2%. We've been talking about the line that Ben Bernanke put in the sand, said as soon as rates get to 2%, which was years ago that he discussed it, we're finally at that market. We finally got to that point. There are a lot of contributing factors. The economy basically is better. Did the tax cuts contribute to that? Do corporations feel more confident? Regardless of all the noise about the tariff battles and stuff, I think corporations are feeling better about the future. That's what really moves inflation, is people's expectations about a better economy or a worse economy. And that's why I think we see inflation moving up, because I think people generally feel better about the future than they have in the past. So the Fed is reacting to that as they move interest rates along. I think the market is expecting probably a good 80-90% chance that the September Fed meeting will see another change to the current Fed range of 1.25% to 2%. So I think that's significant for all the portfolios. As inflation moves up, it'll definitely continue pushing the yield curve on the short end, and then most likely continue that flattening on the long end. But here we are today with these higher interest rates. You can look at December 2016, December 2017, and June 30th of this year, specifically in the area that we're managing your portfolio, nothing but higher and higher and higher and higher interest rates. So that is welcome news, I think, overall. As I said, we're reaching yields yield on cost in your portfolio just under 2%. And you'll find that to be very comparable to your LGIPs and your bank situation. The yield on this short-term portfolio is getting very, very close to that, and closing that gap in that we've had for about a two-year period now since the Fed started raising interest rates. We touched on unemployment. I think unemployment now is at 3.9, I think the most current rate that we've seen here. GDP, of course, was a big number this past quarter. And I most likely think that we'll probably have some more of those kind of GDP numbers throughout this year. Some of the current market themes that we've been looking at is really kind of a strong labor market. We've seen the effects of the tax cuts. We've even seen the Fed, of course, raise interest rates. We've also seen the S&P index up a little bit better this year than we had in the beginning of the year, and also some of last year. As far as what we can expect around the world, you put a place on the map and there's something going on. So there's a lot of concerns. But I think, you know, those concerns generally work out okay for U.S. Treasury notes and agencies. There's a flight to quality. We'll benefit from that. All three portfolios have high credit quality bonds. So any type of flight to quality will certainly help all of the Treasury and agencies. Of course, could widen spreads in corporates, obviously, but you have a lot of exposure to government bonds that would be helpful from that perspective. But there's all kinds of issues faced with. So we kind of talk about a normal yield curve. It's all relative to what is happening around the world. So those are kind of the points there I want to make. As far as the portfolio going forward, we will continue to be defensive. As I said earlier, we still feel like the Fed's probably set for at least two more Fed increases this year. I think 2019 might be a little bit more quieter year from a Fed increase perspective. That's, of course, will still be dependent on what GDP inflation is doing. But I think we might see a little bit less activity in 2019 from the Fed. But that still remains to be seen. So we're keeping the portfolio a little bit shorter,
where most of the juice from the portfolio is coming in, that 1-2 year area, that's where the higher yields are for this segment of the yield curve. In the back of the report, as I introduced a few quarters ago, we have, excuse me, I have to get through all these pages, all the detail. To the stress test of the portfolio is back here. As you'll see, that we did the instantaneous rate shock for this quarter. If you look at the unchanged column of 51.9 in the center, 25 basis points to the right, 50 basis points to the right, does not really materially move the value of the portfolio in aggregate. So we're positioned, I think, pretty well to withstand a rate increase, an instantaneous rate shock if there would be, even up to 50 basis points. I think we're in still pretty good shape. This is the horizon analysis, taking that same situation and looking at over the next 12 months. Modest changes in the portfolio value. From a credit quality downgrade stress test, if everything was downgraded by one notch, of course, very unlikely, it puts about 15% in the BBB category, which is still investment grade. So relatively speaking to the size of the portfolio and the diversification of the portfolio, you have about 15% could be in the BBB category. From the asset allocation, pursuant to the investment policy rules, and you'll notice here, the yellow bar represents how much availability you have in those asset classes. The blue represents the current holdings. Everything is in compliance with the investment policy from the actual security type. And then, of course, the individual issuer limitation are all within compliance of the investment policy. And I'll leave it at that. If that's a little summary for the portfolio, again, we'll continue to be defensive. Again, we'll continue to fully actively manage the portfolio. You'll continue to see lots of activity in the portfolio as we're going to move the entire portfolio into the new higher interest rates as they continue to happen. That's our report.
Steve, question on BBB. You got 2%. That's the lowest. Oh, BBB minus is mm-hmm. the lowest, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's 2% in there. Obviously, they're riskier and all that. But historically, what's the, you know, in the past, you've had defaults or an issue where it's been through a bad investment. But you get a higher rate, but.
Yeah, so far from our track record, we haven't been involved in default. So okay. we've our credit committee, knock, has done a pretty respectful job of avoiding the actual bonds that defaulted.
So they go in there, it's not high rated debt, but they know which one's a better
yeah, every bond, every bond has to go through the credit committee.
Right.
And if we feel at any moment in time that particular bond is in danger, we will notify you, and most likely either, depending on how close we are to maturity, we'll recommend to sell that bond.
Any other questions?
Potential losses before they get even worse.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Absolutely.
Any other questions? PFM? You have a motion?
I make a motion to approve.
Second.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Carries. Then we have John Griffith from Cat Trust. Okay, folks, well, I've got a real surprise for you here. New report format.
Yes.
All right. I don't know whether anything you looked at it or not, but if I seem to stumble a bit, it's because I haven't been through it that many times. I might like my fellow managers. The formats are pretty well more. They're good. I do like the format. Okay. Well, it's a little more consistent with the. That the managers should use. Anyway, now there. Okay. Let's. But it doesn't work.
That's just where the mouse is. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, it's the battery of something on your keyboard.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to start here on page 6. And essentially, this graph is not particularly active in the sense that it looks fairly steady and boring. That's actually good because that's what it shows. You notice since inception, we've had the portfolio started at a
103, yeah, 183.
183.
And each year, each fiscal year, 14, 15, 16, 17, we had kind of a consistent growth, net contributions remained steady. And then during the fiscal year to date, so far, it's been, well, I shouldn't really say that. But that's 116, right? So it's consistent in terms of time. That would work out, right? You're right on track. So this is the investment allocation. And again, the red components, the internal counts, fixed income managers that have $183 million. And the allocations are pretty close to the policy. They would be normally, well, those numbers are actually reflective of the entire portfolio. We were asked at one time to keep track of the fees, and this sheet actually does do that, and it takes it back to the fourth quarter of 16. You'll notice that the fees have remained pretty steady, and they're quite reasonable, quite attractive in our opinion. No difficulties there. About $44,000 a quarter. Okay, again, now this is the asset allocation detail with respect to the managed portfolio. You can see that the actual percentage for PFM is about 28%, actual percentage for Sawgrass is 41, and Sites is about 30. The target numbers would be 30, 40, and 30, so you're pretty much effectively right on target. This is the total portfolio's trailing performance. For the last quarter, that total was 0.25% or 25 basis points. For the year to date, it's actually a negative number of negative 31 basis points. For the 3 years, essentially what we have is a solid performance for each one of those longer periods, beating the overall total portfolio benchmark. In terms of fiscal year performance on the lower block, you can see that same basic pattern is consistent. We've had beats pretty much in every fiscal year other than one. This is investment returns. Again, these numbers, you've already seen these numbers, it's just displayed in a somewhat different way. The total fund returns are illustrated at the very bottom. So we have the total fund return of 25 basis points for the year, negative 0.46 for the year to date, 18. And then we roll back for each of the years, and you can see how, again, we have beats in most of those years. This graph, I had a similar graph in my prior report, but it was strictly fixed income. This actually gives you kind of a broader vision of where the portfolio sits in terms of a much broader investment universe. So you can see we're looking at real estate, U.S. equities, international equities, and also commodities, and where they sit way out on the right-hand side in terms of risk and potential return. Your portfolio is right near the axis there, just slightly into the upper left-hand corner. So it's very conservative, but of course that's mandated, and that's what it should be. Okay, this cash flow summary, I think we need to get into. And these are the benchmarks. Now, I could get into each of the managers, but I don't think I need to do that since we've already had that entertainment. So with that, that's the report. Are there any questions?
Any questions?
A motion, please.
I'll make a motion.
Second it.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
We accept cap trust report.
On the screen is our internal report. Breaks down the portfolio. And the biggest change is our SunTrust Bank account balance. It's cash flow. Our customers now are in the heat of the summer, so our cash flow should go up for our municipal services. It's just a timing item, so it's off like $5.6 million. But we have positive returns from everything. Our money funds are doing great. I mean, the SBA prime is 2.11, and the Florida Fixed Income Trust, 2.2. We like that. We continue to see growth. We hope we flip around the returns on everything else. The market drives that, though, so we have to see how it plays out this next quarter. One of the things we're going to do, though, is take a good, thorough look at the investment policy and the allocations. And my team, and I'll get with the committee members and kind of review that, some changes. Next meeting, we'll bring it to the committee for approval. Just to update it. And one of the items Kevin Sykes brought up is an addendum to the policy. I'll go ahead and hand that out. We're not going to approve it or anything this time. But just make sure the investment advisors have it. Some change that Kevin suggested. Thank you.
Does everybody have one?
Oh, I do.
Everybody have one? Kim, would you like to go to those changes real quick? Suggest the changes?
Well, essentially, we do a compliance review, and one of the things, this was an existing addendum. And essentially, we needed to revise that such that prior under a reorganization, it was still referencing the State of the River. We needed to update that to reflect Sykes Investment Advisors as State of the River was incorporated into Sykes. In addition, it referenced. We wanted to clarify where it has securities minimum rating. In the policy, it has triple B, and prior, this policy actually had a mid-B on one side. It was for S&P, and so we wanted that to incorporate the entire universe of triple B in the S&P and Moody's range. The mortgages and asset backs are still the same as far as minimum rating or A minus or better. And we also wanted to reference the fact that the addendum was noting an April 2011 policy, and that needed to be reflective of the policy currently in place of October 2015. So it was more of just kind of cleaning the addendum up for updates and as part of what that is.
Any questions? We're going to go through the policy thoroughly and update everything. And we know the contractual piece has all been updated with the name change. So.
And the one thing I'll say is this addendum was done prior because your existing policy has a minimum for mortgages and asset backs, a maximum of 30%. And this one, it currently still has 50%, and we would obviously want to keep that. So that was the reason why the addendum was done in the first place, because we're a longer manager and more inclined to buy more mortgages and asset backed securities, and in particular to the benchmark.
And we'll reach out to Cap Trust when we get some changes in place, and have John review them first. Want to go to any of the investment managers?
Right. Yeah, I want to point that out. That I'm the one that actually did this amendment, if you will.
Okay.
And my intention wasn't forward to the other managers for their review and comments and anything that's been going to change. But consider yourself served.
Inferred.
So that's taken care of. One other thing I just wanted to note, in your sense, our firm is no longer known as Cap Trust Advisors, LLC.
Okay.
It's Cap Trust Financial Advisors.
Okay.
So that's technical. It's
For the record, we're still PFM.
That's good.
For now, you look out.
You're still City of Collins. Top of Florida.
Someday, still, hopefully, moving for all of us. That was it primarily. I just wanted y'all to know that I was going to inform you of all this at the right time. So just get back to me in the time you want.
Yes.
We'll do that, John.
Okay. And also, just a reminder, our policies for preservation, protection, at the same time, maximum return by minimizing risk. And that's what we want to strive to go forward with. And that's why we're going to look at the policy and look at the allocations and see what makes sense for City of Ocala.
Any other questions or concerns?